and you can call in and be a part of the show. There's one or two things going on that may people may have interest with and may want to interest in and may want to discuss. The number is 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. That's the number. As we sit in a very odd position right now, interesting, an odd position for the U.S. empire, in that the U.S. has started a war with Iran, effectively lost the war, but the in starting the war, they unleashed economic catastrophe, which is only, Americans are like, oh, the gas price of gas is too high. Well, unfortunately, Americans, it's going to get a whole lot worse than this before it gets better. The what I call the duopoly, supposedly the Republicans, the Democrats, et cetera, mostly fight over, you're not doing it right. You're not doing the war. Or they, Democrats will attack Trump. Well, the Iranians still have this or that, almost like you're not a warmonger enough, or you didn't do this war the way. They don't come out and say, we should not be starting wars around the world. This was an illegal, as all of our wars are, but this was particularly illegal because this is a war of aggression. We attacked a country that was not in self-defense. There was no provocation. There was nothing. The U.S. just made up a pack of lies, as we usually do. I mean, this is the norm, right? It's we changed one letter from Iran to Iraq, so we changed the Q to an N, and then we went with weapons of mass destruction again. What's interesting is the whole thing was a lie. If you go back to the original lie was, I put it like this: since Tulsi Gabbard resigned today, we can go back to last year. Last year, as pretty much every year, the National Intelligence Assessment said Iran does not have a weapons, nuclear weapons program, and is not attempting to weaponize their nuclear program. That was the intelligence agency's stated the obvious. And Donald Trump started talking about nuclear weapons and Iran, and when he was asked, hey, well, what about Tulsi Gabbard? She just released an intelligence assessment that said Iran has no nuclear program. Donald Trump said, quote, I don't care what she says. In other words, so. You know what it reminded me of, quite frankly? There was a guy named Tyler Drumheiler who was the head of the CIA in Europe, and he said when he found out for sure that they through CIA intelligence that there was no weapons of mass destruction in Iran, he got a meeting with Bush and Cheney and all of those people to tell him. And he says, hey, good news, we got all of our info. There's no weapons of mass destruction in Iran. And he said he just got a cold, icy stare. And they said to him, this is not about weapons of mass destruction. This is about regime change, right? Which is the same thing here. The weapons of mass destruction, whatever the case. And here's what you have to understand. This was a lie to keep the American people in line. This was a lie so the American people would support an illegal war by their government. Like amongst them, they didn't like dispute whether it was true or false. They all knew it was false. In fact, after the war, Richard Perle, I forgot what country he was in, but he was given a lecture and he said, we settled on weapons of mass destruction because we felt that was something that everybody could gather around. In other words, we're looking, what pretense, what lie are we going to use? I don't know, what do you think? I say we go with weapons of mass destruction. Yeah, I think we can settle on, everybody will go with that. Let's go with that. They had decided they were going to start the war. It was just which lie they were going to use, which is pretty much the game plan with every war. And now it started like this. The government, Trump administration said, well, there's protests, and in Iran, there's legitimate protests, and we've got to go in and protect the protesters. Isn't that interesting? Like they protect the protesters here. But at any rate, and Scott Bessent, who is interesting, he's Donald Trump's money man. What's interesting about Scott Bessent is that he worked for George Soros, and then he was one of Hillary Clinton's close inner circle confidants, and now he's with Donald Trump. In other words, it's a big club, as what's his name said, it's a big club and you ain't in it, right? Scott Bessent was with the Clintons, the Soros, the Trumps. In other words, it's all one game. It's all one game, right? But at any rate, that's you can like argue, oh no, it's Trump and Clinton there hate each other. Yeah, but why do they have the same people working for them? But whatever, see things as you may. So Scott Bessent then said, well, we used our economic power to crash Iran's currency because we knew that would create protests. And that created the protests. And Trump said, yes. And then we armed the protesters. So wait a minute. So wait a minute. So wait a minute. According to the Trump administration, they caused an economic problem in the country to generate protests. And then when the protests started, they sent weapons to the protesters, so the protesters were armed. And then they said, the Iranians are treating the protesters mean. We must go protect the protesters. Well, wait a minute. You created the circumstances for protest. You armed the protesters so they would be violent. That's like saying you started a fire in my house and then you came in and said, I'm a fireman. I want to put that fire out. No, you're not. You're an arsonist. You started the fire. And so then we said, okay, well, we've got to help the protesters. Well, that fell apart. So then Trump said, okay, well, in that case, it's nuclear weapons. In other words, we're going to attack Iran, but okay, protests didn't work. Darn rats, what are we going to do now? Well, okay, I think we can all settle on weapons. What? Look, when all else fails, right? Remember Syria? They're using, what was it? Gas on their own people. The Syrian government never gassed their own people. In fact, information has come out recently that there was an Organization for Prevention of Chemical Weapons investigation. Then the people involved in the investigation said, nah, we don't think it's what you say it is. And they basically fired them and brought people in and rewrote the report. So it looked as though the Syrian government used gas on their own people. And so now people run around like Syria used gas on their own people. Well, in fact, they didn't. It was weapons of mass destruction. It's always a lie. It's always a lie. It's always a lie, right? I'll throw one other thing before I get back to Iran in. I was at a friend's house one day and this guy was there talking, and he was like talking about, and as you know, I'm a recovered Democrat. He used to be a Democrat, never a Republican. I'm to the left of the Democratic Party, so I can't become the member of either one of these crazy warmongering parties. But the guy was in there talking to me about misinformation, right? Like he's like, yes, and I'm like, And I brought up, I mean, just numerous, unlimited numbers of times that the United States government had deliberately lied to the American people. And I'm like, you really think that the United States government, who spends unlimited amounts of time making up lies, putting out misinformation, disputing things that are provably true, you think that I don't know, it's just me. How can anyone believe that the United States government is like opposed to misinformation? No, they're actually opposed to information. Misinformation. They came up with numbers. Misinformation, malinformation. You know what malinformation was? Malinformation was it's the truth, but it's being used to go against something that we don't like. So they just came up with numbers, with names, and all kinds of things to say we don't like people saying things that go against our warmongering, violent, vicious, brutal piracy around the world. And we got to come up with a name to stop them from doing that. When we want to do something and people want to question it and say, I don't know about that, no, not allowed. That's misinformation. That must be stopped. And unfortunately, there are a lot of Americans that buy into that. That whole misinformation, there's a fundamental flaw. And the flaw is that the ruling elite, that the political class, that they're the ones that should be able to decide what's true and false. The people who have lied us into war, who have lied us to put us into a situation that we're in now where the economy is crashing and going to crash. And they're the ones who are going to the ones who if you say, hey man, I'm opposed to Israel's foreign policy, you hate Jews, those people, those are the ones that we're supposed to, that if I say, but I thought Israel was a country and I thought I was allowed to say, can I say I don't like Americans' policies? Sure. Nigeria, absolutely. Well, if I say I'm opposed to Germany's policies, does that mean that I hate Germans? No, it does not. Okay, I'm opposed to Israel's policies. You hate Jews. It doesn't have to make sense. It's not meant to make sense. It's meant to be effective. It's meant to shut you up, to stop you from opposing the United States foreign policy. So don't try to make sense out of it. Just make sense out of this. Those people are not out here acting in good faith to try to stop misinformation. They're acting in bad faith, trying to stop people from saying things that they don't want common folk to hear. That's what it is. So I'm sorry. I don't buy the whole misinformation thing. And I find it interesting that there are people who buy into that whole the political class and the ruling elite and the people in charge are out there acting in good faith, trying to thwart misinformation. History tells us that that's just not true. So let's continue with Iran. So here we are with Iran in a situation where the United States has lost a war to Iran and doesn't know what to do next because there is nothing really to do. Iran has all of the cards. You know, think about this. Right now, the United States is, you know, technically, I guess, I'll put it to you like this. The U.S. is at war with Iran because the U.S. started a war with Iran. But because the Constitution has very specific things that must happen in order for the U.S. to have a war, the government just says it's not a war, even though it is a war. The Constitution lays out very specific things that would have to happen if we called it a war. So we just won't call it a war. That's all it is. We're not going to call it a war. We'll call it something else. Isn't that nice? We've been had once again. There is no Constitution. Okay, forget it. There's no rules that our government is going to abide by. If they don't abide by the Constitution right in front of our faces, do you think they're going to abide by any of the other ones? You think they're really concerned about misinformation? Yeah, well, they're not. And so here we sit at a very difficult period, right? Europe is very dangerous. Let me tell you something. Let me. You know, I was did an interview today from this Dubai, and they asked me, "What do you think about Europe and European leaders?" And I said, "Well, I've never seen anything like it in my life, to be quite frank. These are the biggest lunatics in life. I mean, in the history of the world, I've never seen worse leaders for this reason." Okay. The actual, if you look at the European leaders right now, their plan that they make pretty clear is they want to militarize. We've got to remilitarize. We've got to strengthen our military, which they don't have neither the money nor the political will of the people, nor the industry, nor the energy to do. But that's what they said. We need to remilitarize so we can fight Russia, right? And we expect we'll be ready to go to war with Russia by 2029 or 2030. So that's their plan, to remilitarize and go to war with Russia by 2029 or 2030. Okay. Here's the problem with that. Let's think about this. Let's just think this out. Now, personally, based on everything I've seen, I don't think the Europeans will be able to remilitarize because they don't have the money. Oh, by the way, they're about to face a catastrophic energy problem, as we will, but ours won't be as bad as theirs, but it will be bad. So they're about to face, just catastrophic. I think most of their governments will fall over the course of the summer and into the spring because it's going to be a catastrophe over there. But at any rate, unless something happens in Iran to end this thing, and I don't see that happen. And even if it does, it'll take a while before they get enough oil back on the market to level things out, right? But so this is the brilliant plan. Number one, this is the military leadership in Europe. Number one, we're going to remilitarize, okay? Number two, we'll be ready to go to war with Russia by 29 or 2030, in 2029, 2030, so we'll go to war with Russia. Okay, now, okay, that's your plan, fair enough. Let's just say for the sake of argument that everything is successful in Europe, right? So I could tell you many reasons I don't think they will be, but okay, let's just play along with this as an intellectual exercise so you can see where I'm going. The Europeans remilitarize, they build up a gigantic military like the world has never seen. They go up to the Russian border and they attack Russia. And they go to war with Russia and then they defeat Russia. Oh, in 6 months, in 3 months, let's make it 3 weeks just for the sake of this. And they defeat Russia. Now, okay, so you got what you wanted. You defeated Russia in 3 weeks in a gigantic military. Now, Russia is the preeminent nuclear power on Earth and the preeminent missile power on Earth. Nobody can compare with Russia's missile technologies. No country on Earth can. And no country has as many nuclear weapons as Russia. So, European leaders, you remilitarize, you attack Russia, you win the war, and you're marching on Moscow. Russia's nuclear doctrine says it's very plain, as would any major country's nuclear doctrine would be. In the event that a major nuclear country is facing defeat and somebody's marching on the capital, they're pushing a button. And they will turn Europe into a pile of irradiated dust. Now think about what I just said. If the leaders of Europe were to actually achieve the goal as laid forth, I'm not making this up, anybody can look into it, as laid forth, if they were to achieve their goal, they would all be obliterated in a nuclear firestorm. I don't know, I'm not a politician, but I wouldn't think that would be a worthy goal for the leader of my country. I would think that if the leader of my country had a gripe with my next door neighbor, and my next door neighbor was the preeminent nuclear power on Earth today, that my leader would say, let's get on the phone and let's build some kind of a security architecture, some kind of a security infrastructure, so that this doesn't happen, because if it happens, we're all gonna die. Oh, by the way, let me add this. You know what the Russians said? We'd like to sit down and talk with the Europeans to build a new security architecture. And the Europeans are like, no, we can't trust the Russians. We got to get ready for war. And I thought to myself, you know, World War I, who was at the center of that? Germany, France, Europe. Okay, fair enough. World War II, who was at the center of that? Germany, France, Europe. That's interesting. Right now, who are the countries that are pushing the hardest right now for this? Germany, France, Europe. You know, back when I was in investigations, we had a term for that. It was called a clue. It was called a clue that something is amiss with Germany, France, Germany, France, and England. I don't know what I said, but it should have been Germany, France, and England. That there's something really, if you look to, and I gotta be square with you, this is not an anti-Europe rant, but maybe it is. If you look at the history of what these people have done around the world and still doing, I don't know how much you know about, as an example, okay, England's history. You know, at one point, when they were in charge, when they were dominating, when they colonialized India, there was one period of time where they did, I think it was in Bengal, they starved the people. Somewhere, numbers are between 6 and 12 million people they starved. 6 to 12 million people. As I've said about the Holocaust that we're told about in Germany, it's not the Holocaust, it's a Holocaust. A lot of other people around the world have their Holocaust. It was a Holocaust, but it wasn't the Holocaust. The Brits, they got some Holocausts on their hands, okay? And it is estimated that under British rule, as a direct result of British abuse and murder, etc., around 60 million people in India died under British rule of all the various terrible things they did. If you look at what the Belgians did to the Congo, they turned an entire nation into a concentration camp. You know, what they would do is, if you were picking rubber plants or whatever you were picking, and you didn't pick enough that day, and you had like a five-year-old son or whatever, they cut his hand off, they cut his foot off, they would cut your children's, they'd cut yours off sometimes. So you had all these people who were missing limbs, because they would cut off the hand of a child or a parent or whoever who didn't produce enough on this in the slave camps. An entire, so, you know, when I look at the history of Europe and I say to myself, man, the history's terrible. I mean, just absolutely going around the world doing the worst things, and somehow we have people, and how, I don't know, brown people who think that I'll look at Europe and I'll say Europe is my ally, and we've got to fight with Europe to stand up against anybody. I'm sorry, my dear and fluffy friends, I ain't there. I see Europe for what it is. I see Europe is what its record says it is. just a place of colonialism. Still, you know, I have a friend that was in Kenya recently talking about how the colonial shadow of England, of British colonialism, is still imprinted on the society and the abuse there and all the terrible things that are going on there that were all basically imprintations of British imperialism. That all over Africa and other places in the world, when the French or the British or whoever it was, the Dutch, you name it, when they would so-called leave, they didn't really leave. What they did was they left the comprador class in charge. They left a class of people who were black, who were Africans, but who were the 1% billionaires. And their job was to make sure that most of the money in that country was shuffled out of the country into the hands of the European colonial powers. And it still goes on to this day. And unfortunately for Americans, we are, you know, very much brainwashed, sadly. I don't blame Americans in a way I do because, you know, come on. I mean, if somebody lies to you all the time, if somebody steals your wallet, if somebody mistreats you and you still believe them and you still think they're the good guy, I mean, to some extent, you have to take some responsibility for that. But when I hear the things that I hear out of Americans about, oh, yes, we're standing up for democracy and human rights, my thing is, how could anyone look at the history of US foreign policy? Look at the history of European foreign policy and still believe that the US and the colonial powers in Europe are standing up for democracy, standing up against corruption, standing up for human rights. That's absurd. Those are things that are said to the brainwashed people so that we believe that they're on a mission of goodness, right? Think about it. Why is your government doing that? Are they doing that because they want to steal everything that ain't nailed down? No. They're there for human rights. And to stand up for good. I mean, you can believe it if you want to, but history tells us something far different. 202-588-0893. We got some open lines. First call, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is MC from Herndon. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. What's happening, MC? I'm all ears.
You know what's happening. You see the news just like I do. You know what's happening. What do
Yes,
you
I
think about
do. What
that?
do you think? Go ahead.
I think it's a bunch of crooks, liars, and thieves. Now they're
You are
trying to
correct.
take away the voting rights, redistricting. It's just crazy. They
Let
didn't
me
want
ask
to
you
give money
something.
to criminals for beating
Now
up
look
the
at
police officers and killing police officers.
You know, I have a question, something that's been running through my mind lately, you know, something that I've been trying to straighten out, right? And it came from a conversation I had with someone about voting rights. Okay, voting is the process, right? This is how that's the process that we supposedly use to get someone to represent us, right? To represent the people. That's the process, right? And so we argue over the process. People are
Supposed to be.
arguing. Supposedly, and people argue over the process. Oh, do people have to have IDs? Oh, the Supreme Court's overthrowing the Voting Rights Act. All these things. Where can you vote? Who can you vote? There's not enough machines. Okay, all right. I understand that, and that's reasonable. That's reasonable arguments. But here's the other side I get. And in the end, we got to choose between two candidates who argue about who loves Israel the most. So for all we do, even if the process was perfect, if everybody could vote, if they literally came to your house and you could fill out the ballot by hand and take a picture, and there's no way they could cheat, you still get to choose between two candidates who love Israel the most. It's like they don't have to rob it
Yeah,
at,
but
you know what I'm
check this
saying?
out, man.
They go ahead.
Check this out. None of this came about until Trump got into office.
That's where we disagree. Do you remember
Tell me
2000?
when there
Do
was a
you remember
president president.
2000? Do you know what happened with 2000 in Florida with the voting, but basically Gore was robbed?
But I don't
Hello?
know anything about that. Yeah, I'm here.
The
How did
2000
he get
vote where
robbed?
Al Gore versus George W. Bush. Do you recall that?
How did he get robbed?
Well, I won't get into it, but the bottom line is this.
No, no, no.
See,
You made a
that's, well,
statement.
no, well,
You made
okay,
a
I'll make a
statement.
point and
You
then I'll
made a
let you get the
statement.
last word. Okay, here's my point. That's where I disagree so much. When people say none of this happened until
I
Donald
didn't
Trump,
say
well,
that.
really, they lied us into war in Iraq. Did Vietnam happen? Did Freddie Gray happen? Did I could go on and on, all the terrible things that have happened, the wars and the theft and the overthrowing of governments and Thomas Sankara and Kwame Nkrumah, all these terrible things that happened. Donald Trump wasn't in office. We overthrew country after country, and Donald Trump wasn't in office. The idea that none of this happened till Donald Trump was in office ignores a history of hundreds of
I said
years
the
of
election.
murder,
I said
of
the election. I
slavery,
said the
of
election.
you name. Go ahead, go ahead.
I said the election. I didn't say you to go on a rampage about history. I know history. I'm talking
Okay.
about what's going on now. This is
No, I disagree.
dangerous.
That's been going on. That fight's been going on for years. They literally killed people.
You tell me when they fired over 300,000 federal workers.
Well, I thought we were talking about the election. They literally
No,
killed people in the South who were
don't.
trying to vote. Donald Trump wasn't in office in during the 1930s and 40s. The people were killed. Black folks was killed because they weren't trying, because they just wanted to vote, trying to get the vote. So the idea that they just started trying to take the vote when Donald Trump came into office, that doesn't make that disrespects all the lives of all the, I mean, the lives, the people who lost their lives fighting to get the vote.
Yeah, and when they did that, we decide, and we got the voting rights, correct?
Okay.
And now all of a sudden, since this guy and his party came in, they've been just destroying everything.
They've been fighting the
And you
Voting
don't
Rights Act
want to
on.
agree with it. You want to keep going back in history, trying to do this and try instead of speaking what's going on now.
No, let me tell you what it is. I have a historical context. I'm not going to start. History didn't start when Donald Trump took office. History did not start when Donald Trump got office, came into office. Because, see, here's
He's
my
trying to
problem with
create
that. I'm going to tell you my problem with
he's
that.
trying to create a
We have
dynasty.
a systemic problem. This is not a problem of an individual. This is a problem of a system. Is he bad? Yeah, but he was produced by the system. I do not agree that you can just get rid of Donald Trump and suddenly put the next Republican in or whoever you're going to put in and things will suddenly smooth out. I don't think that's true.
It's going to take a long time for whoever gets in there to smooth this out.
I don't think that if somebody gets in,
A
they ain't putting them
president,
in there to smooth it out. They're putting it in there to keep up to keep what they're doing. Well, I'll say this. You got a
tell
whole
me
lot more
if
faith in the
Brown
system than me,
is.
brother. I think the system is rotten to the core. Yeah, okay, we're going to the next caller. And see, I think that is where I run into a disagreement with a lot of people, right? I look at the system. And if I look at Donald Trump, I say, well, Donald Trump is exactly what this system would produce. It would produce a Donald Trump. And if it didn't do that, it'd find a different kind of Donald Trump. But we have a system that's corrupt, a system that starts wars, a system of imperialism that's been doing all these terrible things. And now we got Donald Trump. But if Donald Trump goes, the system is not going to suddenly go, okay, well, all good now, because it was a mess before he got here. I would argue that's how something like Donald Trump gets in, because things are so screwed up, so messed up. The Democrats, they did everything they could to help him get in. They didn't even have a primary and basically just took Kamala Harris and said, there she is. She's going to win. It was a disaster. The whole thing was a disaster, and that's how Donald Trump became public became be became president. I'm no fan of Donald Trump. He's as bad as you can get. He's a psycho. He's a complete lunatic. We all agree. The difference is, I think the system is screwed up. We can agree on how bad Donald Trump is, but the solution to me is you have to fix the system. You have to address the systemic problems that were there. And for people to say, well, this just started with Donald Trump, I don't think anything started with Donald Trump. In fact, I used to work for the ACLU. I worked for the ACLU. And you know what we were some of the stuff we worked on? The Voting Rights Act, because it was under assault then. Anyway, 202-588-0893. Next call, you're on air. What's your name? Where you're calling from?
T-Berry or T-Bird from Upper Marlboro, Maryland. How you doing?
T-Bird, what's happening, man?
I was listening to you, and a question I have is who really rules the world? And whether it's Saudi Arabia or here, there are billionaires, and it doesn't matter. My concerns are not really addressed by either the Democrats or the Republicans. And there's so much, so much media inattention to anybody else that I can't get anybody but people like the first caller that you have who believe that this stuff started with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
It just is sort of funny. You know, when they started this stuff, under Biden, they got rid of Arab commentators on MSNBC, CNN, mm-hmm. all these other things. Nobody seems to notice. They're just talking about press freedom now that Donald Trump is in there. Kamala let Jewish settlers speak at the Democratic Convention. Did she let the other point of view in? Nope.
No.
No, she didn't. When there were American news media things, or Chinese at that time, that were showing the killing of children by Israel. First of all, they got rid of 700 or 800 of these videos off of YouTube. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they did it, but they did. It was reported in The Intercept last October. Who rules us? Are these politicians just out for money? In the old days, they used to go for our advancement. The National Association for Advancement of Colored People is what it was called. I haven't heard it hardly aside from them then. They got upset when Martin Luther King went against the Vietnam War, because that's not what the rich folks wanted. They mm-hmm. wanted the poor folks to keep dying in that thing. Unfortunately, they didn't get me. But they got a lot of my friends and a lot of people who turned out badly. But the whole country was against that, and it didn't stop. The whole 60% of the country were against sending these weapons and other things to Israel. Did that stop them? Nope. And mm-hmm. this was under both Democrats and Republicans. And so when I hear people coming in saying, Trump is the problem. Trump is the problem. I went to an Ivy League school, and the year before Trump got in, they were talking about getting rid of DEI and these other things. Even though, in my opinion, the minority students were much more qualified than the rich white students who got in because of their parents' money and whatnot. If you ask me, we live in a racist country. But we don't realize what's happening. I don't know what happened, why we can't get unions to run some of the businesses around here. Why, when you have an example of somebody doing well, China, we want to go to war against them, or Cuba. Because we can go to war against Cuba, we think, without ending the world. So I hope Cuba gathers together with other countries, and like Nicaragua, Venezuela, and set up and go against American things like the country that caused people to use their name with two syllables, Iran, who fight them. Because ultimately that's what people who fight Iran do. They run. So the name is Iran. If people who call it Iran instead of Iran, they may have a point. Anybody who fights them seems to run after a while. Are we going to destroy them, too, like we're trying to destroy anybody who doesn't let the Epstein rich 1% class run the world? I don't know. But they do run the world, and it's time for us to look at the dynamics of it. We need labor unions not only to go for higher pay, but to actually take over companies here in this country so that there are no billionaires left, and so that our concerns actually get heard, because it does not happen right now in the United States.
Thank you very much. Certainly appreciate the call. And, you know, T-Bird voiced the concern of a lot of people who really are, again, what was he talking about? You know, who's making the decisions, right? Is it the politicians? Well, it doesn't appear that. You know, there are people that argue Donald Trump ain't got but so much authority that, you know, the decisions are made above the presidential level. I mean, for gosh sakes, there sure is often much of a continuity of, you know, foreign policy from president to president. So, you know, you would have to argue that something's rotten in Denmark, that's for sure. And that I do agree with the people. I'll put it to you like this. You can talk about who really has the power and who really makes the decisions, but one thing is obvious, and that is this. The government of the United States does not represent the people of the United States. You can use the word democracy. You can use the word, the term constitutional republic, however you, whatever terms you want to use, but the terms are supposed to imply a representative government, that there's 330 million and the people in charge somehow represent the people, the 330 million people. Well, it's clear now that they don't. So whatever this is, it ain't neither one of those. I argue it's an oligarchy. Some people call it a corporatocracy, a kleptocracy, you name it. But it sure is not a representative government. Well, maybe representative of the 1%. Next call, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Is that me?
Yes, it is.
Oh, hi. It's Louise from Baltimore.
Hi, Louise. How are you?
Oh, fine. Thank you. I was just calling because of the previous caller. About blaming it all on Trump. Who put the Supreme Court in place? Who put the Supreme Court justices? Who voted for them? I mean, and that includes Clarence Thomas, who is the longest, you know, sitting justice right now in history. Who did that?
If I'm not mistaken,
and the Republicans. It was the Democrats and the Republicans.
I'll go one further. When Clarence Thomas was up, he was getting a lot of heat because of the whole Anita Hill thing and all this other kind of stuff. And apparently there were other women who were going to testify against him. Guess who the chairman of the Senate committee was that blocked all that? Joe Biden.
Biden
was the chairman of the Senate committee that got Clarence Thomas in, and he supported and he declared, oh, you know, everything again. So, you know, you look at this system and you say, hey, you know, everybody, there's enough guilt to go around on both sides of the aisle.
Well, the Democrats voted for these justices voted for these justices to be on to get on the Supreme Court. It was both of them. So just to blame it on Trump, you know, all of them are complicit. And as far as the African elite, Black African elite here in the African countries, they're putting the African elite here in the United States in power to sell us out too. They even sell us, including our institutions, including Morgan and Howard, and you know our educational institutions that you know basically are selling us out along with the rest of the Black elite here in the United States. And the other thing I wanted to talk about when you were talking about being anti-Semitic, it was so disturbing when I watched Annapour and Company when Massey gave his concession speech. This woman who's on Annapour Company, I don't know her name. She's always on there. They never identify her. But she said that she made a comment that his speech was opposite of being gracious concession speech, and she said that when he talked about the fact that he did not work for you know AIPAC, then she said that was an anti-Semitic trope. So almost anything you say about Israel is anti-Semitic, whether it's true or not.
That's well, absolutely, and that is it's terrible. It's sad. It's unfortunate, and I think in the long run, it's going to be a bad thing for Judaism worldwide. Period. I think it really will. But what we have now is a government protecting the ideology of Zionism. Now, here's the thing about it: is Zionism Judaism? Well, let's start here. Joe Biden, wasn't he a Zionist? avowed? How about Donald Trump, avowed Zionist? How about, and I could go on and on. Are any of those guys, so are any of them Jews? They're not Jews. I can go on and on with the people that are avowed Zionists. So just because I'm criticizing Zionism as an ideology or the government of Israel, I'm Black. Can't I criticize every government in Africa if I choose? So then why if I criticize, well, okay, so I'm going to criticize the policies of the government of Israel. Oh, well, that's anti-Semitic. So what we're looking at is a smokescreen that's used to say you're not allowed to criticize these people or we're going to put a negative term on it. We're not going to listen to the criticism. We're not going to say, is it legitimate? Is it political criticism? Is it, what is it? It's simply you criticize Israel or you criticize Zionism. You said something that the Zionists don't like, and that's anti-Semitism. It's terrible, and it degrades the reality of anti-Semitism or racism or any of those things, in my opinion.
And, you know, President Wilson of Morgan, he made a comment, we're open for business. They're taking Zionist money and they're doing the Zionist bidding. And they, you know, when they restructured their whole radio station to just have one person, one view on there, when prior to that, they had an array of views. So, you know, that's an example of them, you know, selling us out. So.
But well, I believe, you know, if you thank you very much. If you listen to my show, here's what you know should know. I believe we should be able to talk about things. I don't think things should be off limit. I think criticism is fine. If you want to criticize me, fine. If somebody calls and says, Garland, I disagree with everything you're saying and I think it's absurd, I'm not going to say, well, you're a racist. No, you're not. You're not. You have every right. I disagree with you, your ideology, your race, your religion, or lack thereof, whatever it is. Fine. I'm not going to put up a smokescreen. And you see, sadly, what has happened is this. The whole concept of anytime somebody disagrees with the U.S. government foreign policy regarding Zionism, they're called an anti-Semite. Here's what that is. It's a thinly veiled counterattack. That's all it is. And, you know, it's like if somebody says, let's say I'm working and I'm working at the French fry counter and the manager comes up and says, Garland, you're a little slow on the French fries, bro. I mean, you're supposed to put out 10 French fries every half hour and you're only putting out 5. Pick it up, dude. You're moving slow on the French fries. Oh, you just said that because I'm Black. No, it says right here, you got to put out 10 French fries bags a half hour and you're only putting out. Oh, yeah. But if I was white, you wouldn't say that. You know what? That like degrades and disrespects all other Black folks because I am using that as a thinly veiled counterattack. Oh, you're saying something that you have a right to question how many French fry bags I make. You're the manager. But instead, I launch a counterattack by saying, you are the racist. Now you're supposed to defend yourself. And if somebody says, you're the anti-Semite, they don't have to discuss Zionism. They don't have to discuss legitimate political disagreements. They can launch a thinly veiled counterattack. And now you're supposed to, as soon as you're called a racist or an anti-Semite, or as soon as you're called a name, you're immediately supposed to abandon whatever it was you were complaining about, regardless of the legitimacy, and then you're supposed to start defending yourself because that's all it is. It's a counterattack. It is, and to say thinly veiled, it's getting more and more thinly veiled. All right, 202-588-0893. Next call, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am.
Oh, yes. Hello. I'm sorry. My name is Josiah. I'm calling from Baltimore, Maryland. I just want to say that I totally agree. I think you're telling the truth, man. It's just annoying and kind of sad that most of our people still are not seeing the bigger picture. Everything I say, I caught in the middle of conversation a couple of callers back. But when I turned in the radio when you were speaking of Leopold and the Belgian, Congo, what they were doing. And I just want to say that it's the system. It always comes from the system. And that system was generated from the same philosophy that the colonialists and imperialistics have created over 400 years. And I just want to add to what you're saying that I think primarily the best solution for our people and I know this is a stretch, our ultimate solution is really to leave this country. Really, it is. Because we have suffered so much over centuries, and we're going to continue. These people are not going to change. They never will. We gave faith in a system 50, 60 years ago, and it didn't work. Even 100 years ago, when they destroyed Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an example. There are so many examples, especially when Marcus Garvey tried to get us to look towards Africa, race first, you know? And here we are today. Our people still, there's no improvement. We still own like 1 or 2% of this country's wealth. They will make sure if we won't get ahead. So the ultimate is to work with our people in the continent, like Ibrahim Traore in mm-hmm. Burkina Faso. I'm sure you know about him.
Yes, I do.
To literally support him and look towards. And I just want to, and basically the inspiration of my message comes from, you know, Peter Tosh, the famous reggae artist.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah. There's a song he made called 400 Years. And there's a verse where he says, 400 years and my people still can't see. 400 years and still the same philosophy. We need to wake up, come together, and love one another. It doesn't matter what organization or denomination or any type of ism or schism we have. All these differences is what's keeping us separated. We have to focus on the source. And that's it. That's all I wanted to add. I really congratulate you, brother, because I don't see anyone speaking on, and I've had personal conversations with people I know, and they argue with me. So it's yeah. like it's always that few of us that know the real problem, the real source, and we need to move on with the truth. Have to.
Thank you. Certainly appreciate the call. We got another call. All right, next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hi, this is MJ calling from Maryland.
What's happening, MJ?
Hey, how you doing?
Wonderful.
I just want to touch base on I don't know if you've ever talked about it. I think we missed your show last week, but you know, the Bilderberg conference was in DC about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And people need to realize that, you know, it's a game that we're never going to win. It's called a rat race for a reason, and everything's decided for us, including presidents. Think, I mean, what happened to Massey, you know, he mm-hmm. should have won, but he got bought out. It's like, it's time for revolution. We can't keep playing the game. It's rigged.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. I mean, I was looking at the numbers of the Thomas Massey. Okay, so Thomas Massey is a libertarian, and it's certainly when it comes to economics, I disagree with him. But he's an anti-war guy, and I don't care who you are, if you're anti-war, hey, you know, I support that. That's a good thing. But Thomas Massey, the last time he ran, the last primary, there was 52,000 votes cast, right? This time, there was 104,000 votes. And a new guy got almost all of them. And now, the guy that he ran against, Ed Gallrine, Ed had run for a local state office and lost. So this, you know, it wasn't like this guy was a powerhouse, but some very, very wealthy Zionists came in and proudly said, hey, we're putting in money somewhere around $30-some million. And as I said about, if you look at the numbers, there's certainly some anomalies, shall we say. But two things where he went wrong. Number one, he opposed war. Number two, he wanted to release the Epstein files. Yeah, that wasn't definitely was not going to happen. Isn't that something? Go ahead.
I said that speaks volumes.
Yep, the guy that wanted to release the Epstein files and was opposed to the Iran war, opposed to the Ukraine war, he was basically saying, end war and release the Epstein files. Not in America, my friend. You're in the wrong country. That's what the system does. Trump didn't do that. The system. Trump was, that's the part of the system. Sure, he's there when the system tells him jump, he's going to say how high. But, you know, it is. Thank you very much. All right. Certainly appreciate it. We got any more callers? Okay, no more callers. All right, thanks a lot. So that's, let me just make sure I got my time right. All right, we got 11 minutes. And I got a great song. Just make sure my main man, you got the song, right? We got the song. Oh, yeah, this is one of my favorites. It's a very hot house. You know, I love my house music. These four walls, it's awesome. But at any rate, and so I think right now, look, if you have a problem, right, There are problem-solving models. I used to teach problem-solving. One of them was called DEFINE, right? And you use the word, you use an acronym and blah, 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 right? But most of your problem-solving models start off with this: define the problem. If you can't define the problem, let's say your car is broke down. You can't fix your car until you figure out, it's making a funny sound. What do you think it is? What is the mechanic going to try to do? He's going to try to listen to it, drive it, do everything else, and figure out what is that. In fact, he might say, "What's the problem? The oil light's on. Turn the car off and don't move it. You're out of oil and you're going to burn your engine up." Depending on what it is, right? You must evaluate and define the problem. And if you believe that the problem is Trump, well, then all you got to do is replace Trump and everything will be fine, won't it? But I don't believe that the problem is Trump. I don't believe that a person is the problem in the system. I believe that a complicated system like that, look, I could go on with the problems. Here's one of the problems. The United States deindustrialized itself. It sent all our industry overboard, and now it's a financialized system. How does the United States, how do they make money? The banks have, what are they called? Asset-backed securities and derivatives and all these complex tools. That's how they make money. That's non-productive capital. Are they building factories so that they can build things and employ people in the factories? No, they're not. That's not how they're making money. They're making money with complex financial tools so they can put X amount of dollars in there and they can get a certain percentage back on it. And now, guess what they do? Now, and it's really obvious with Trump too, and that is, basically, they bet on the market based on what they're going to do. It's insider trading. Trump's like, "Hey, look, let's see, what time's the market open tomorrow?" "At 8 o'clock." "All right, the war's over." And then everybody bets, and then he's like, "Okay, has everybody got their money in?" "Yeah." "The war started back," and then all the, then it goes back up, right? This is not new. Look at the history of Nancy Pelosi. Look at what happened during COVID when they caught a bunch of people from both parties doing that. Right, just before the market crashed, the FBI did an investigation and it found that four, what was it, five, I think it was three Republicans and two Democrats. They had video where, I mean, excuse me, audio where this guy from North Carolina, one of the members of Congress, was telling like all these rich people, "Hey, there's going to be shut down and the economy's, the market's going to crash." "Oh, really?" So they all went out and made a fortune. That's how they make money now, insider trading. That's how they do it. They do it through moving money around. But we don't get anything out of that. We get something out of it if they build things, productive capital. Trump didn't come up with it. He's here as part of this machine to keep it going. If we want to have a successful country, we're going to have to build back some industry. We're going to have heavy industry. We're going to have to change from a financialized economy to an industrialized economy. Otherwise, it just ain't gonna work. Otherwise, a few bankers will make a lot of money, a bunch of rich people will make a lot of money, and the rest of us will pay the price. And you can say, "Well, if we just got rid of Donald Trump, oh, really? Do you think we'd suddenly be industrialized again?" No, we wouldn't. They just find another iteration of Donald Trump to stick in there. But that is what it is. All right. If you want to catch up with me, I'm on, I got my YouTube channel at the THE, at the Garland Nixon. On X, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Garland.Nixon on Instagram, at Garland N, Garland N, I believe, on, oh no, at Garland Nixon on Telegram, and my email is Garland N, my first name and the first letter of my last name, Garland N at gmail.com. Thank you very much. My main man, Kalia, does a fantastic job. And as you know, I love my house music. These four walls, man, that's a hot house song now. Let's roll. Let's roll. I'm out.
26th, WPFW presents All Blues, a Miles Dewey Davis centennial birthday celebration, 5 a.m. until midnight. Davis was one of the most influential figures of the 20th century, transforming music, fashion, and art. His life was complex, marked both by amazing accomplishment, like being one of the founders of bebop, and marred by incidents of domestic violence. Our special will